damning accusations in a new Amnesty International report.
The state of Israel has committed and is continuing to commit genocide against Palestinians in the occupied Gaza Strip.
Israel is strongly rejecting the allegations.
With a record as long as your arm, Amnesty has a documented history of framing Israel as fundamentally illegitimate.
What is in Amnesty's 300-page report that supports such a serious conclusion? We'll speak with a representative of the organization. Today is Thursday, December 5th, and this is The Issue from VOA. Hi, everyone. I'm Lori London.
The conclusion that Israel is committing genocide is unequivocal, evidence-based.
Presenting the report Thursday in The Hague, Amnesty International Secretary General Agnes Callamard said, after months of in-depth, focused research, its conclusion had not been taken lightly, politically, or preferentially.
We found the repeated use of dehumanizing language. We found statements calling for genocidal act and other crimes under international law. We verified videos of soldiers replicating those narratives, calling for the erasure of Gaza or to make it uninhabitable.
But rejecting the conclusion, Israeli government spokesman David Mentzer, citing Israel's right to defense against Hamas attacks.
Genocide, they cry about Israel. They distort reality and downplay the clear intent of Hamas to annihilate Israel. Just listen to what Hamas and Iran say.
And Mentzer also accused the human rights organization of having a negative bias toward his country.
With a record as long as your arm, Amnesty has a documented history of framing Israel as fundamentally illegitimate. For Amnesty, Israel was born guilty in 1948 and have been guilty ever since.
Joining us now to get some insights into the report and what led to its conclusions is Amanda Klassing, Amnesty International National Director of Advocacy.
Thank you very much for taking the time to speak with us about this report.
Yeah, it's my absolute pleasure.
First of all, why is this being released now, and how long has this report been in the works? How long have you been working on this?
So a report like this takes a long time. We started to document violations of international law since the beginning of the conflict. And at the beginning of this year, we started to receive questions and understand that there were questions related to whether or not what we were seeing is genocide. And the ICJ was also making a determination whether or not there was a risk of genocide. And so we started to put together the pieces of evidence to answer the question of whether or not what we were seeing was genocide. So we didn't start necessarily out thinking that that's what we would come to, the conclusion that we would come to. We knew that risk was there because of the International Court of Justice, but it wasn't until we connected the dots, pulled the totality of the evidence together over the course of many months, that we understood that this just is more than just a violation of international law. This is something deeper.
It's a big word that is not used lightly.
Yeah.
I think the dictionary defines it as the deliberate killing of a large number of people from a particular nation or ethnic group with the aim of destroying that nation or group. What did your investigations find that you are reporting that lead to the conclusion that you did?
Amnesty looked at the question of genocide under the Genocide Convention. So the Genocide Convention actually provides the definition that we used. And in order to make a determination of genocide, Amnesty had to make three examinations. First, we had to determine whether or not Palestinians in Gaza constituted a part of a protected group under the convention, which is a national, ethnical, racial, or religious group. The second thing we had to determine was whether or not there had been a commission of at least one of the five prohibited acts under the convention. And we found evidence of three of those acts: the killing of members of the group, causing serious bodily or mental harm to members of the group, and deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction in whole or in part. And the third element of establishing genocide is frankly, the most difficult, and that is to determine or examine whether Israel committed these acts with the specific intent to destroy in whole or in part the group as such. To determine whether intent existed in this case, we looked at international jurisprudence on the question. Intent can both be derived from direct intent. So we looked at comments made by Israeli officials, including over 20 comments made by members of the security or war councils. And then we also looked at inferred intent. And looking at inferred intent, we looked at the pattern of behavior over this period of time, in addition to other elements that require specific intent, like torturing communicado behavior related to deliberate.
Can you give us any specifics on what those things that you said you noted as far as statements and as well as observations that concluded that intent part?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll give you some examples of the direct intent and then some examples of the inferred intent. So on direct intent, we looked at over 100 statements from Israeli officials that called for the destruction, genocidal acts, or other crimes under international law, including statements that were dehumanizing towards Palestinians. Of these, we identified 22 statements that were specifically made by members of Israel's War and Security cabinets, and they seemed to call for or justify genocidal acts. But we didn't stop there. We then looked at how that language that was used by Israeli officials was frequently repeated or echoed, including by soldiers in Gaza. We looked in detail at 62 videos, audio recordings, or photographs posted online that showed Israeli soldiers making calls for destruction of Gaza or the denial of services to people in Gaza or celebrating destruction of civilian infrastructure that in many ways either directly echoed or replicated the statements that were made by Israeli officials.
What were those Israeli official statements?
So we looked at some of the statements that had been made by Prime Minister Netanyahu, Minister of Defense Gallant, and even by the president. It was statements that made no distinction between Hamas and Palestinian civilians, statements that called for the destruction or this particular treatment of Palestinian civilians, and other statements that belied a call for or justification of destroying Palestinians.
And what about the inferred intent? Can you give us some indication of how you came to that?
Yeah, absolutely. So we followed the pattern of conduct that we believe indicated genocidal intent. So that included repeated and direct attacks on civilians and civilian objects, deliberately indiscriminate strikes. Some of those strikes wiped out entire Palestinian families. They were repeatedly launched, and at times these strikes would result in high numbers of civilian casualties. We looked at the repeated use of weapons with wide area effects in densely populated residential neighborhoods. We also looked at the speedy, massive, and comprehensive destruction of civilian objects and infrastructure. This included homes and shelters, health facilities, water and sanitation infrastructure, agricultural land, and other objects that are essential to the survival of a civilian population. We also looked at the repeated destruction of civilian objects and infrastructure, including cultural and religious sites, even when there was no discernible military objective for doing so. And then we looked at the repeated evacuation orders. They were often incomprehensible, misleading, arbitrary, and were repeated in ways that actually massively forced displacement under unsafe and inhumane conditions. And finally, we looked at the continuous refusal to allow adequate humanitarian aid and other essentials to reach people in Gaza. And this was all done in the face of international condemnation and even legally binding orders by the ICJ. So we looked at all of those and then asked ourselves whether or not there were other kind of other explanations for this behavior, including recklessness or callous disregard. But we came to the conclusion that Israeli officials not only understood the impact of the acts, but they in fact intended their outcome, simply because they repeated the repeated patterns of these unlawful acts over time. and the persistent use, the persistence of these acts, even when the international community had raised concerns or the UN had raised warnings.
The Israeli government is pushing back heavily and, you know, saying it's not at war with the Palestinians. It's at war with Hamas, and that it's just in response to what happened on October 7th. How do you respond to that?
Yeah, absolutely. So looking at intent and looking at jurisprudence over a variety of international institutions, the question of intent in the context of genocide, and we come to the conclusion that you can have dual intent. So there can be lawful military intent alongside genocidal intent. We don't make the determination whether or not genocidal intent can be instrumental or means by which you meet your military intent, but in fact, it can still exist alongside it. And so we acknowledge that there are military objectives to be met, and those military objectives cannot justify the scale, size, and scope of the killing and what we see as a genocide.
What is happening on the ground right now, as far as, obviously we know it's a catastrophic humanitarian situation, but if you had to briefly just describe what you know about what is happening in real time on the ground for civilians?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a horrible situation right now when you think about these three prohibited acts of genocide. You know, whether or not people come to the same conclusion of international law, we can all agree that the conditions are horrible. More than 42,000 Palestinians have been killed, including over 13,000 children, and over 97,000 people more have been injured. The research that we've done into some of these attacks show that many of them have been direct or deliberately indiscriminate attacks, and some of them have wiped out whole families. It's happened without effective advanced warning, sometimes while people are asleep. And the conditions of life are so damaging. People are on the population's on the brink of collapse. The level of hunger, the level of insecurity and diseases, the mixture of malnutrition, people's lack of access to clean water and sanitation. This is a slow and calculated death that right now doesn't seem to have an end in sight. And the hope of this report is to focus attention on what's happening and have both the international community and the government of Israel dramatically reassess its policies to end this genocide and to take the steps to reach a lasting peace ceasefire.
And so beyond the investigation that you've conducted and the conclusion in the report that you've released, what are you doing with that report?
What we're hoping to see under international law, so the Genocide Convention is a convention that has over 100 countries that are party to it. Both Israel is a party to it, and here I'm based in the United States, the U.S. is a party to this convention. And so states have obligations under the convention, not only not to commit genocide, but also to take steps to prevent it when it's happening somewhere else. And those steps to prevent it mean that third party countries, other countries other than Israel, have an obligation to take steps to see this genocide stop. That includes ensuring that their supply of weapons do not go to continuing international law violations. Again, I'm based in the United States, and we want to see the U.S. to suspend its transfer of arms that are currently inconsistent with U.S. law, U.S. policy, and international law, including its obligations under the Genocide Convention. We also want to see an urgent funding of humanitarian assistance and pressure to have access restored. And that includes including restoring funding to UNRWA, the UN Relief and Works Agency for Palestinian Refugees, which is a vital lifeline for humanitarian aid and critical services.
What about the International Court of Justice or the International Criminal Court? Where does this fit into that?
Yeah, so we do make recommendations that the ICC include in its investigation the crime of genocide. We also want states that are party to the ICC to fulfill their obligations under the ICC and to, in the case of existing arrest warrants, to actually take steps to fulfill their obligation. As far as the ICJ, we hope that our research is helpful in its ongoing assessment of the current context. We know that the ICJ case, the pending ICJ case, will take years to adjudicate. And so we couldn't wait for years. We wanted to ensure that if there were steps that could be taken to end the ongoing genocide, that our research could be a part of trying to bring an end to the killing as that case is pending. And we do hope that the information provided related to intent is helpful in its adjudication, but we understand that it'll take a while to reach its conclusions.
Is this the conclusion of your report and your investigation, or is this something that you will continue to look at, observe, and look into? Or do you feel like, and is this situation ongoing?
Yeah. So first of all, the situation is ongoing. Our conclusions are related to research that was conducted in the timeframe of the beginning of the conflict through the middle of this year. However, we recognize that over the past 2 months, the crisis has grown particularly acute in the North Gaza governorate, where the besieged population is facing starvation and annihilation amid relentless bombardment. And so we are going to continue our investigation. I should also note that this is parallel to investigations that are ongoing, analyzing the atrocity crimes of Palestinian armed groups under international law on October 7th. We have new research that is in a separate report and legal analysis that will be coming out in the coming months.
Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us about this.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Amanda Classing, Amnesty International National Director of Advocacy. Amnesty's report comes just 2 weeks after the International Criminal Court issued arrest warrants for Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his former defense chief for alleged war crimes and crimes against humanity in the Gaza conflict. Both have denied the allegations. Israel has repeatedly rejected any accusation of genocide. U.S. State Department Deputy Spokesperson Vedant Patel Thursday called previous and the new allegations in Gaza unfounded.
As I've said before, that we do not and have not concurred with these past findings regarding genocide. That does not change or alter the continued concern that we have as it relates to the humanitarian situation in Gaza. It does not change the continued concern that we have as it relates to this conflict's impact on civilians and civilian casualties.
Amnesty's branch in Israel is also distancing itself from the findings of its parent group, saying it had played no part in the research and did not believe Israel was committing genocide in Gaza. However, in a long statement, it did say that the killing and destruction in Gaza had reached, quote, horrifying levels, and called for an investigation into possible crimes against humanity. You've been listening to The Issue from the Voice of America. On behalf of all of us here at VOA, thanks so much for joining us. Follow The Issue on X and Facebook at VOA The Issue. And for news 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, check out our website, voanews.com. In Washington, I'm Lori London. We'll talk to you tomorrow.